and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, podcast where two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of too many podcasts. And with me, Tweaker, two amazing people who are.
I'm Erin M. Evans. I'm the author of the Brimstone Angel Saga and the Books to the Usurper and the newly announced Gift of Guthix for RuneScape.
Yeah.
That's my new IP novel.
Rejoice, mortals of the Prime Material Plane. It is I, B. Dave Walters. Hello. Sorry, you were making a joke. Go ahead.
I was going to say, should we make frog sounds for that one, actually? Because it's got the giant frog on the front.
That is a big old froggo.
Big old frog. Yep. Giant frog demigod who thinks you're doing just fine, sweetie.
I mean, I went straight to Pan's Labyrinth with the frog, so I'm all like, do not like giant frog.
No, Zoya's a nice frog.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, at least there's a good frog.
Okay, so we've been doing the NaNoWriMo episodes, and we're going to continue doing that. But I want to start something off with a.
Did B Dave get to introduce himself?
Yeah, greetings, mortals of the Prime Material Plane. It is I, B Dave Walters.
Sorry.
Yeah,
okay. I'm sorry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's late, listeners, and we're a day or a couple days off, as you could say. We're a little off. But the thing is, though, is I wanted to start off with a question that I didn't talk to you two about previously.
That's how I like it. Blind.
And it's not a listener question. This is my question that I genuinely cannot figure out that I've been has perplexed me since I worked at Barnes & Noble. Why do so many readers hate starting a series that isn't quote unquote finished?
Oh.
I do not understand. My Instagram feed has been full of it. It's like, oh, when you finish a book and realize it's part of a series, I'm like, cool. You got into a new series and you supported an author. Like, what are you talking about?
See, I have the opposite problem where legit, all jokes aside, George R. R. Martin is who ruined this for me.
Yeah.
Of starting a series that isn't finished. Like, I didn't read Harry Potter because I didn't think J.K. Rowling would finish it. Like, and then by the time she did finish it, I'd seen half the movies, and and now we're here. And I realize that is a very chicken or the egg type thing, because obviously if you don't buy the book and support the book, there won't be the sales to commission the ongoing thing. So there's definitely been times I bought books and just put them on the shelf that I was like,
okay, that's interesting.
Someday maybe I'll get around to this, because it was just waiting those years and years and the slow agonizing realization before his untimely demise that those other books were just not coming. I got that problem.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
There are a couple of high profile cases of authors who promised a big, big series. And were very, their first book was super, super popular. And then the series petered out and has not been finished. And writing a novel is a lot, and writing a series is even more of a lot. But it is the case that, if you don't buy the first books, then the series stops.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, nobody's interested in this.
Yep.
So I get it. You've been burned, readers. Those of us, I've seen a lot of authors turn and say, I don't want to write series anymore. I just want to do standalones because your sales are, it's like a little risky. It's a little dangerous. Right?
Because
you get so many people saying, I'll wait till the last book comes out. And the reality is like that the last book doesn't come out.
Yeah.
Especially if it is a case like those the days of getting an 8-book series deal, that comes very deep in a career if it comes.
Yeah.
It's less and less common because a lot of people can't do it. And that's fair. Like I did 6. It is a lot, right? And you have to keep coming up with ideas and you have to keep making it complicated and you have to keep making the characters like grow and change, even though it's been a long time. Not every story is suited to that. Not every writer is keen to do it. But at the same time, some of them are really great at it. So I don't know. I think it's also okay. If you read, I can't tell you how many times I've read a book, really liked it, maybe even read the sequel, and just kind of like, I don't get around to finishing the series, but it didn't mean I didn't enjoy those books.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't end, like, that's still okay. Or like, you play a D&D game and it falls apart because nobody shows up.
So,
It's not that.
You're close to why this perplexes me, because I
Yeah.
don't hear this. I've heard it a few times, but I don't hear it nearly as often about TV shows, where it's like you get a season of something and
Yeah.
people are like, oh, you've got to watch this, and you pile onto it, and then that might get canceled. You might not get the rest of it.
And well, people, because people comprehend ratings, you know? I mean, kind of. Then they, you know, they spend years with Restore the Snyderverse and Save Warrior Nun and all this other business. But I mean, which, you know, once or twice has worked. People don't understand the book business fundamentally, and they are not
Yeah.
aware of the fact that the book business is a business, you know?
Yeah.
Like I had,
That is really just a fundamental flaw at the base of almost all of publishing.
Almost all of fandom, really. Like
That's true.
I was posting about my courses, which are of course at theundisputedacademy.com, and somebody commented, because I kind of like sent out a call for like retweets and signal boosts, and of course people did, because I'm blessed to know the finest people. And somebody literally was like, "It's too expensive. It should be free. And if people think it's great, they'll tip you a couple of bucks." And I was like, "Tell me that you don't know how fucking anything works without telling me. Because even the things you think are free aren't free. If it's
No.
free, you're the commodity, you
Yeah, they are
know?
taking your info.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're selling you,
Yeah.
man. You know, like nothing is free. Like none of us, nowhere, anywhere, at least on a professional stage, are creating things out of the goodness of our own hearts. Like there's people that have little art studios in their sunrooms that are painting paintings no one will ever see, and that's all well and good. But if you see that shit on a shelf or an ad has been run, we're not doing it out of the goodness of our hearts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first time I had someone say that to me though at when I was working at Barnes & Noble, like I feel like I looked at them like how Steve Harvey looks at some contestants on Family Feud when they just say something ridiculous. Like, and I just stared at him for like a good 10 seconds because I just that's not how my brain works, I guess.
I have never had that happen. I've never been like, "Oh, I didn't know this was a series." The closest thing that ever has happened to me to that was I didn't know that Serenity had anything to do with Firefly. The movie Serenity had anything. So I just watched the movie thinking like, "This is a cool sci-fi movie." You know? Well, here's the thing. I never got through Firefly because of that, because I'm like, I very much know how this ends. Like, very much know. But you know, for a book, I've never had that issue. But I mean, again, like I've been reading my whole life and also worked in bookstores, so I kind of know how to, you know, read back matter. I think the only thing that is more frustrating about this, and I have lamented this more than once, is specifically the Dresden Files books, specifically. There's no indication of the order in which they come.
Oh, God, drives me up the walls.
And
Oh
if,
my God. Yeah.
but there's like more than once I would be like, especially like in a used bookstore or something where they
Yeah.
really have like no vested interest in telling you. And I just pick it up and it legit was stuff like after the death of his wife. And you're like, "Bitch, what? I didn't,
He got married.
like temporarily, apparently. Like I didn't know any of this, you know?"
The back of books like that have zero chill.
Yeah.
No chill whatsoever.
When I ages ago when I was an editor, like this was a thing that we had a little trouble with because and at the time I believe Borders was the one pushing it. They didn't want numbers on the books. And I think the reasoning was that people would come in and look at the numbers and they go, oh, they don't have the one I want. And if the numbers weren't there, they might pick up the book and buy it anyway. But if you are doing a long-running series, it gets very confusing. But yeah,
Dude.
there was some back and forth between we don't have numbers, we do have numbers.
I mean, I really enjoyed Borders. It was one of my very favorite bookstores, but dumb decisions like that is part of why it's gone.
Yeah, that's
That is
fair.
just not a thing, you know? Because I mean, the reality is, yeah, I mean, like I run into this with mangas. I actually don't read,
Yep.
oh, sorry, manga.
Manga.
I don't read a ton of manga myself, but like my oldest is into it. And like we'll go to a store and you know, it's like 1, 2, 4, 8, 9, 12, you
Yeah.
know? And you're like, "Well, you know, okay." But you being confused about the outcome is not going to change what you were actually after, though. Like that's just being sneaky.
I actually recently decided that because I was like, oh, I haven't read manga in a while. I'm gonna read some manga, and I just watched the One Piece live action. I went, you know what? Screw it, buy One Piece. And I went into Barnes and Noble. I went, I'm about to piss off a lot of people, and I just put my hands out, grabbed volumes 1 through 10, squished, and walked up to the register.
you know, part of it is the reason why I don't read manga and don't enjoy it as an art form is I've spent my whole life reading comic books. And I don't like the black and white art.
I love it. That's my thing.
Full stop. I don't like it.
So actually, one reason I absolutely love Junji Ito is because of the way the black and white artwork works. But let's move over to our topic for the folks out there who are prepping to do NaNoWriMo in this Preptober we have. We're going to talk about structure and outlining.
Well, watch what I'm about to do. In many ways, we've already started talking about it because we're lamenting finishing. We're lamenting people that don't see things through, you know, and a lot of that, you know, if they're going to people get so mad when you're like, pull a Jordan, you know, like George R. R. Martin was so offended when people were like, he's going to pull a Jordan and die before he finishes it.
Oh, I didn't realize what pull a Jordan meant.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gracious. Gracious.
Oh yeah, he got so mad about that, and he's like, that is so offensive, and I'm like, but that don't make it not true, George. That don't make it not true, you know. A problem with that, and I know you're still trying to give the intro, but that is the awful price of pantsing. Now I don't actually know Jordan's process. I think Robert Jordan just told a much longer story than he intended and it got an unforeseen illness, and who could have possibly known such a thing?
Keep them coming out.
Yeah.
From what I've heard of his process, like I know he calls himself like his style gardening.
Martin, not Jordan.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Jordan, for Martin. Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea for Robert Jordan what his process was. But yeah, George R. R. Martin talks about gardening and like he has these ideas in his head of like things that are happening, but really he's just planting the seed for these characters and letting them grow the way that they want. And I'm like, okay, that's not what I do, but that's fine.
Y'all can't hear because it's not what he fucking does either, or the story would be finished. You know, like you cannot hear the sound of my eyes rolling back in my head here, folks. And you know, longtime listeners know my feelings on this matter. But it's I will say this, and then I will let Trevor give us our proper intro to the question here. More than once, he's written 300, 400, 500 pages, wrote himself into a corner, and then had to start over. That would have to happen to me once. Once.
Yeah.
And I would do something different. That's it.
Okay. I have a thing to talk about related to that, but we were going to let Trevor say.
Oh, no. You people are being interesting. I want you to be interesting.
Wait, what do you mean, you people? Like,
oh, my God. Oh, Jesus.
Talking before this about sort of a pitfall of DMing, right? Where the DM gets an idea, vision for what's going to happen. And then the gameplay, like the players don't know this. And so they perhaps aren't approaching it to make that vision come true. And the DM shifts and forces it. And that can feel really bad. And it occurs to me as you guys are talking is like, if you are going to sort of pants this, if you're just going to like let the characters go and see what happens and really do that, then you cannot have, you know, in the same, like you can't kind of have it both ways, right? Like if you're going to do that, you can't get yourself in a corner because it's going to lead to the natural conclusion of the problem.
Right.
If you are going to just sort of like go, my characters are sort of like living, breathing entities. I have fully fleshed them out in my head. I know what they will do and I will present the problem and then see what happens. it feels like you should naturally get to a place where you have a result.
Yeah.
And then you can go back and tighten that up. But if what you're trying to do is get to a particular kind of ending, that setup doesn't work as well. You have to kind of run through it in your head first. And so it feels like for that to be the case where he's written a lot of words and comes out saying, I've got backed myself into a corner. There is a goal at the end. He has got a vision. He's just trying to like trying to throw the players in and hope that what they choose to do is bite on the villain's like stupid trap.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. You know, and it's although I do have to issue two disclaimers, dear friends, especially those of you that are only hearing us for the first time. Hi, how are you? Welcome aboard. In general in life and specifically in the context of NaNoWriMo, it is fine to pants if that means it gets done.
Yes.
You know, like it is better that you finish it. It's just not a very good habit to form for a successful long-term career. The second thing is... to what you were just saying, Aaron, about that it's like theoretically you can just let them do their own thing and they'll get where they're going. That only works if you don't have an outcome. It's kind of like if it's just like, let's just watch Aaron and Trevor travel versus let's watch Aaron and Trevor get to Santa Fe, New Mexico by noon tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you've only got so many books, if you got a place that you're trying to go, like you gotta bring it in. It's not just this free range thing. And even when you plan and even when you outline, you always reserve the right that when you get to the moment, if something that you plan doesn't feel right, you can change it. You know, as these characters come to life in your mind, is the example I always give is like I'd planned for her to pull the trigger. I now realize she's not a person who would, you know?
Yeah.
And then it goes where it goes. But this idea that it's like, I didn't even know there was going to be a trigger to be pulled. It's kind of like, are you sure? You know, like, you sure? It's just it ends up pantsing in particular, I find, ends up with a lot of wasted wheel spinning, because a lot of stuff comes out that even you don't know where it's going, so it just sort of like comes out of your head. I mean, it may be possible to pants a $200,000 word novel that gets cut down to like a super tight 120,000 word novel, maybe, but then I'm like, you did 30% more work than you had to for no reason. So,
as someone who I always have to put this out there because as somebody who does write a lot of extra words to get the words, the right ones out, like if that's your process, then that's okay. But it is a good thing to try to like hone down and focus, because it will drive you crazy if you're doing, you know, when you write the thing and then you go, okay, looking at this, this is not what I want. I want it to go like this. That's helpful. If you write the thing and you're like, this is wrong and I don't know why, that's not as helpful.
Yep.
Sure. So then where can folks start with structure?
Well, brothers and sisters, both and neither, siblings of all proclivities, you know, I'm a structure fiend. This is my thing that I love the most. Like the thing I love most about writing is structure, which as I have shared with long-term listeners, also, hi, long-term tangerinos, this is part of the reason why I've had the success that I've had in multiple different mediums and genres is because of my command of structure and just what makes a compelling narrative. So specifically for NaNoWriMo, even though I know we're doing these episodes is sort of like a Preptober type thing and kind of trying to like get you ready and everything, I would caution you from overthinking things or stressing yourself out in a way that is going to make you think this is too much to do. You know, the only thing you got to do is have your 1500 words. Now, what I will tell you is the simplest way to structure a narrative, understanding that this is a topic that people have talked about for literally thousands of years, and there's a lot of different approaches. There is no just one way to do this. The simplest way is with beats, which is something that is taken from screenwriting, is usually where that term kind of originated, but it very directly applies to novels, and a lot of people do now. That as you start thinking about NaNoWriMo and you're like, I want to tell a story about a drunken seagull that is trapped on a yacht with druggy trust fund kids that are going to go on an adventure around the equator, right? And I'm like, okay, you know? The first thing you got to realize is the... I forgot my adjective for my seagull. Did I say it was a drunken seagull? It's a drunken seagull. Right. My rats with wings, those things. Everything that I just said is not what the story is about. Everything that I just said is what happens. So you got to ask yourself what your theme is. And your theme is, what is this story about? What's the statement that you're trying to make, right? And then once you have that, you can write down on a piece of paper like this or on a computer, because no one has paper anymore, save the trees. you know, my drunken seagull is trapped on a yacht with drug-filled trust fund kids going on a adventure around the equator. So you know that you've got a couple of things that you can write down right then. The seagull gets on the yacht. Meet the druggy trust fund kids. Probably have something go wrong because of said drugs. Trip around the equator. And then be like, on either side of that, what needs to happen right before that and what needs to happen right after that to make that make sense in the story. And you keep filling out every what has to happen before, what has to happen after, what have to happen before, what has to happen after, until you end up with a list of things that will be the beginning, middle, and end of your story. And then that's your outline. And then you write that thing. Mm-hmm. This is the ultra simplified NaNoWriMo.
Yeah. Yeah. Very ultra simplified. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But that'll get you where you're going. Just that and that alone.
So sticking with that though, a little bit, the structure of it, you've mm-hmm. talked about 3-act structure and 5-act structures on here. Do you think that is anything that should be worried about in prepping for NaNoWriMo, or is that a little too deep for it?
I personally think it's a little too deep, except your story should have a beginning, middle, and end. Roughly, and again, this is, I'm spitballing here. Roughly 25% of your story is the beginning, which is all the setup, meeting all the characters, meeting all the situations. You know, the adventure begins in earnest. Like by the end of the first 25%, you know, the hobbits have left the Shire. That scene when they stop and they're like, one more step and this is further than we've ever been, and they all hold hands and take the step. That's the end of the first act.
Yeah.
Then the middle two, I guess if that's roughly 25%, you know, the next 50% of your story is the middle, which is the meat of the story, mm-hmm. which is act two. So act two is longer than act one and act three. And then act three, by the end of act two, you know what your final stakes are. Like at the risk of mixing metaphors, like you are beginning the attack on the run on the Death Star. Or I guess to stick with the Hobbit, like Boromir's gotten killed.
Yeah.
Well, Boromir technically is an all is lost moment, but again, that's transcending what we're doing here. The death of Boromir is more or less the end of act two. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then act three is the denouement, where you realize that you already have learned what the true stakes are in act two. Now you have to do that thing. You've got to blow up the Death Star. You know, you've got to throw the ring into the volcano, although that's the third movie. Although the third movie is basically the third act in a 3-act structure. Dun, dun, dun. Peter Jackson off in the distance is just twirling his mustache right now, like, you know? So I think that's an easy way to think about it. As you're looking at this list, and if you got like a ton of setup beats, but you know, your whole third act is like they fist fight pirates. You're like, you gotta thicken that up some.
How are we wrapping this up? Well, I was thinking about a good brawl on a boat.
Exactly. I mean, you know, that's just good life advice, really. You know, that's all I would really stress too much about the acts. That again, by the end of act one, everything is begun in earnest. By the end of act two, it is very clear, you know, what the final conflict is. And then the third act is that final conflict and its resolution.
What do you think about structure, Aaron?
I agree with B-Dave that it's not, because that I feel like this is actually a good opportunity to sort of go a little light on the structure, because you are trying to sort of immerse yourself in the process of writing a novel. And there is a lot about story structure that you have already absorbed without necessarily realizing it. And so this is a place where feeling your way through isn't, you know, especially because the only deadline is the one you've set for yourself. But I would say that, like, I agree, like, having a sense of, I mean, for me, I feel like where I'm going to start is going, why this character? Why right now? And why isn't this already been fixed? Right. And establishing, that's the stuff you need to establish in that sort of first act, right? Like, when, why does this story impact this person? And how can I show that? How can I show what this character wants? That is sort of impeded by their own, you know, inner flaw and the obstacle in front of them, and kind of hitting those points of, like, what am I going to have to solve, essentially? And having the advice that I was given as a beginning writer when I was required to write an outline for tie-in fiction, because they want to see what you're going to do first, because they pay you first before you write the book. They want to know you have an ending. And what I was told was, you don't have to have the ending, you have to have an ending. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of show that you can see what is the thing that decides this. Mm-hmm. And so you can sit down and outline it the way we've talked about in other parts of this show. You can kind of do a rough kind of sketch or a beat sheet or something, but I think those are the main things, is sort of finding out, like, asking yourself, like, I think of it as, what is the question established by this story? What is the question that's got to be answered? And if I don't know the answer, that's okay, right? It's your example of, like, you get up to the moment and you go, oh, she wouldn't shoot the guy. But that becomes if that's the question, will she shoot him? Then I don't need to know for sure, yeah, she's going to pull the trigger, she's not going to pull the trigger. I need to know I'm going to go to the place where finding out what's going to happen is the answer. And so if you can figure out what is the question you're asking early, then you know where you're pointing. And you know kind of what your beats are going to be, what those points along the path are going to be like, right? And to throw it back to that idea of, like, of how is a DM like an author, right? Knowing sort of how the obstacles are going to have to line up if you are going to kind of find your way through this, so that you're not kind of wandering, so that we're not riding a road trip and we get stuck at Walmart buying snacks for yep. six chapters, because then, like, oh then God. I have not
We've all
gone
read
in
those books.
Knowing what the question was, right? I just went in and I fumbled around. I didn't go in going, like, oh, this is going to be about how we work through this argument in our friendship that we've been avoiding, but now we're trapped in a car in Kansas, so what's gonna happen? I don't know where we're driving from, Trevor, but apparently we're going
across Kansas. I mean, although if you're trying to go to Santa Fe and you end up in Kansas, like, a lot of all has already gone wrong. But yes.
I let Trevor have the map, and
I know,
that's
true.
Where the fight starts.
Trevor's way too young to use a physical map. What are you talking about?
Fuck,
like, that's
you!
Not
that was the problem, man!
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Then he wanted red
I was around for MapQuest.
I think you just made my point, not yours, actually.
No, yes. I do generally know how to use a map because they made us use it in Boy Scouts.
Yep. I will. There's something that popped into my mind was an article that I read by Noam Kroll years ago. And this, again, this was a thing about film, but it applies equally to novels for our purposes here. You ask yourself four questions about the story of your film, starting from the end and working your way to the beginning. It should also be noted that when using this formula, you generally don't want to give away the third act. I would ignore this because this is for you, not to share with anybody else. Mm-hmm. But his point was, rather tease the third act with points from the first and second. In other words, none of your questions should pertain to anything after the third act break. And the example they gave was from Back to the Future. So spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Back to the Future.
If you haven't, I'm already disappointed in you.
the first question is, how can Marty come back from the past? He has to reunite his parents. Why did he have to reunite his parents? Because he changed the past, which drove them apart. Why did he change the past? Because he accidentally distracted his mother from noticing and falling in love with his father. Why did he find himself in the past? To save his skin using the invention of a crazy scientist. And then you take that, and this is how you you construct a rudimentary outline, and then which will become a log line, which again is a film thing, but still applies to what we're talking about here. And they took that and made a young man to save his skin hides in the past thanks to the invention of a crazy scientist. He meets his future parents and accidentally distracts his mother from noticing and falling in love with his father. So he is forced to bring them together or he will cease to exist. And then you could pare that down even more to a young man is transported to the past where he must reunite his parents before he and his future are no more.
Is that something that is done before you start writing?
Yes.
In that case?
Absolutely.
I will be honest, I can't imagine working like that.
Absolutely.
It seems very, very tidy, but it would drive me nuts.
Well, the thing about screenplays, as I laid on Trevor when we were talking about that, especially in detail, the thing about screenplays is like a novel, obviously there's best practices, but I mean, you kind of do what you want. Like, again, you look at something like The Road, you know, again, still don't think Cormac McCarthy was okay, but hopefully he's okay now.
I'm going to do a spoiler thing real quick. I'm going to interrupt your thought because we did get a listener email that mentioned The Road in one of the things. This was a PS. This was a long email, and I'm just going for this part. PS, my sister had to read The Road for her college class.
Sorry.
As you might have guessed, it was supposed to be a great example of modern literature, and her professor loved it, but my sister hated every minute of it. When she was venting to me, I told her how B-Dave hates The Road at least once a month, and she said that she had never felt more validated and vindicated in her life. She agrees the editors didn't even try.
I'm telling you, it is the most hipster avant-garde, we don't understand this, and so it must be brilliant thing ever. Like, no one will ever convince me that The Road is the masterpiece ever. And I will even say the things Cormac McCarthy are saying are very insightful and are brilliant, and he has a keen and, dare I say, devastating insight into the human condition, but he wrote it like a three-year-old without thumbs. Like, that book is almost unreadable.
I'm gonna read that book one day just out of pure curiosity.
Dude, I'm telling you, just google the opening of The Road right now and you can read it. Like, but while you're doing that,
you talk about your thing.
But to say, you know the speech I'm giving. So yeah, Google page one of The Road. But screen, you could, but the point I was making is you basically can do whatever you want in a novel. The way Alan Moore just wrote a 3 million word book because he wanted to write something longer than the Bible.
Jesus.
That was the point. That was his premise. Like, I want to write a book longer than the Bible.
That's and wild.
It is, but he's Alan Moore. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm like, that's bizarre, but you already said it was by Alan Moore, so. Yeah,
I missed that part. Now it tracks.
Yeah, it's Alan Moore. Well, and you know, so the rules apply differently. Again, Cormac McCarthy got away with The Road. If any one of us submitted that exact same manuscript verbatim, people would be like, you should go learn to write. Screenplays, however, the formula is very specific. It's like they are, you know, 85, 90, or 110 pages. And if you know that, when you know how many pages it is, like I was just vaguely alluding to ag breaks, you know, like if this is 110 pages, the ag break is on page 30, I think, off the top. I literally have a calculator. There's ways to like figure this out. But you know, this is when this must be done by this point. And not even by this point. This must be done on this page. So if you're writing, like, you can't get into the mess that George R.R. Martin got into. Because if you're 50 pages in, you know, and you guys are still at Walmart shopping for snacks, like, you're 100% certain you've gone wrong. Like, with a novel, you could be like, this doesn't quite feel right. But with a screenplay, it's like, no, you are lost. So that's why you have the log line and all the stuff in advance, because it helps you firm that stuff up. Because it's almost like you don't have the time, you don't have the luxury of meandering. You know, you got to get to it.
Reading the opening of The Road and my brain hurts now.
Try 200 pages of that.
I'm gonna try that again later.
Yeah, again, sorry, I wasn't listening to
you've heard the speech before. You've heard the speech. It was just screenplay structure. That's all.
Yeah. So okay, so for NaNoWriMo, we got structure there. So outlines. You were already talking back there about beat sheets kind of forming the outline for it. For NaNoWriMo, do you think that is one of the better places to start with that, or is there another form? Because like I know the thing that I struggled with kind of the most long time ago was Outlink. I just could not wrap my head around, like, well, do I need all of this information? How much information do I need? And stuff like that before I could actually kind of sit down and do it. So what for folks who are trying this NaNoWriMo kind of as the first time of doing something like this, like what do they do for outlining?
When he woke in the woods in the dark and the cold of night, he'd reached out to touch the child sleeping beside him. Nights became dark beyond darkness and the days more gray each one than what had gone before. Like the onset of some cold glaucoma dimming away the world. His hand rose and fell softly with each precious breath. He pushed away the plastic tarpaulin and raised himself in the stinking robes and blankets and looked towards the east for any light, but there was none. When you actually see the book, this is the first page of the road, by the way. There's no formatting. There's no paragraph.
I just realized it's like there's no paragraph.
Yeah, there's no character names. It's just words for 200 pages. like he could have revealed where Jesus Christ was buried midway through this novel.
Yeah. So if some folks out there want to write some words for 200 pages, what kind of outline might they look at for that?
There are a lot of ways to outline, and it is going to come down to you.
Yep.
I have a friend who does bullet points of just sort of like kind of like what B-Dave's talking about. This event, this event, this event, this event, this event.
Yep.
I know people who do post-it notes, who have like a row for sort of the external things and then where do the internal things need to go. I am sort of a fan of doing more like a synopsis, like a kind of stream of consciousness thing. Which I will sometimes break into chapters because that's how I think. I think there's a chapter here. And it's going to depend. And so you might, you know, you have a little time. You might try all of these or some of these, right? You can do something where you find, you know, the sheet that says, you know, what is the status quo? What is the inciting incident? What is the first peripeteia? You know, what happens at the midpoint, right? You can, you know, fill out a worksheet kind of thing. And you will find some of these ideas, some of these ways of thinking about it work better for you than others. And it might be different depending on the story too. If you are writing something that is a little avant-garde, maybe it's going to work. I don't know, actually. Maybe the road would break down really well into post-it notes. I can't tell looking at it, right? I have known people to do it on an Excel spreadsheet. Like,
really?
Yeah, like, you know, especially if you're doing multiple points of view, it's not a terrible idea. I find writing in Excel is sort of just a weird thing all around.
Used Excel spreadsheets for tracking characters and even like what will hold on up. Well, I'm gonna let Aaron finish your point, but I'm gonna show y'all something.
But yeah, so like there's a lot of ways to do it, and I think it's gonna depend on sort of which parts of the story that you kind of anchor on as a writer. I anchor hard on character, and so that sort of stream of consciousness thing is a little like doing a fast discovery draft where I think, okay, they do this and then they do this and then they do this, and that causes them to feel these things. It's very fast. It's like me telling a story and going on too long over drinks or something. People who are more plot focused are, I used to work with an author who actually wrote a very character focused story. And the first time I saw one of his outlines, I was like, Paul, where all the character stuff go? This is just a list of actions. And he's like, oh yeah, I put that in when I'm writing. For him, like what he anchored at the beginning on was, what are the events of the plot? And once he had that down, he was like, okay, I can go. And so that is the question I would ask myself for figuring out what do you need help making sure you establish? Because again, you know, if you really anchoring on the characters and really loving the characters doesn't necessarily mean that that's how you think through if you really love characters, that doesn't necessarily mean you anchor your storytelling on character, mm-hmm. because it might mean that you wander around a Walmart for 60 right? Because you
we're
just
not
love,
sponsored by the
you
way,
love the interactions, right? and that's not thinking about how this story is going to play out, because you're not actually thinking about the characters pushing on each other and causing friction and creating conflict and forcing each other to change and move.
Yeah.
You're just enjoying that space, and these are different things. So yeah. Like, what is the thing that thinking about that first is going to help you see the path through this story? That's the kind of outline you need.
Mm-hmm. I would also say, I mean, again, whatever it takes to get the thing done is what has to get done. But that starting with the plot first, that seems like such a recipe to write. Well, trash is the word that came to mind, but at least something formulaic, because stories aren't about what happens. Stories are about characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like it's.
I that mean, is used... why I was honestly so confused.
Yeah.
Because he was one of the authors that it was Paul Kreile, who wrote Eberron novels, and his character's work was fantastic. And so when I got it, I was like, oh no, did you break or something? Did you just, are you going to be able to do this? But it was like, he already knew the character part. Like, he already felt that, right? And it was just, he had to work this piece out. Or it's possible that he, like, you know, like, he was like, I want these things to happen. And now this is the sort of, like, the obstacle course to run. And now I'm going to put the guy in who will do this interestingly. I don't know.
Okay,
like, here's not the thing. How but, I do hey, it I, at
I'm,
all.
I'm not going to lie. That is kind of how I do stuff.
Like, that's okay.
Yeah, like I don't have I do the big character write out after I have the after I do the beat sheet.
Let me say a place how I could see this working, because again I a lot of times I will create characters based on the necessity of the narrative. You know that I'm like you know, the aforementioned druggies on the yacht, well, they need a plug. Now I got to create their plug, you know?
Yeah.
But I can see, like, again, before his untimely death, when George R. R. Martin was planning Game of Thrones, it's based on the War of the Roses, like almost verbatim. So when you're like, I have these historical personages, I'm never going to give it up, Trevor.
Sorry, no, it's not that. Every time you've mentioned that, I also remember that there was a Yu-Gi-Oh! PS2 game that was War of the Roses, but told through Yu-Gi-Oh! And I can't unconnect those memories.
Now, we all know this. You know,
probably was a great game. So, no, starting with... Can't see how that failed. I truly can't. But starting with these are the circumstances I want to portray, and now I essentially need to repaint these set pieces, you know, or like starting with, you know, like what you did, Aaron. Like, I definitely want to tell a fantasy murder mystery. Like, I know that. And maybe even be like, I want there to be some wooden bones and the bones have been replaced. That's cool. And then it's like, well, who the hell would be mixed up in that? You know what I mean? And then now that kind of gives rise. But I mean, what I can't see is like, I mean, I'm not going to spoil your whole book, of course. Let's go with Star Wars. That I was going to be like, well, there's some space wizards, but they've been largely destroyed. But the dude that destroyed them is still around and used to be one of them, but he's secretly still good inside. And he's going to come and kidnap a princess. There's going to be a Death Star, big ass space station, blah, 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 blah. And they win. You know what I mean? I'm like, I can't imagine like separating Star Wars from Luke, Leia, you know, R2, 3PO, Han, Chewbacca. You know what I mean? They could theoretically kind of come up in parallel, I suppose. But just being like.
And it to be fair, it was more like it was like. Like, here are the characters and they do the things. And not like the character emotionally is here and he acts like this because of this thing. Like, it was just like they find a clue and then they go here and then they meet this guy and then they go here. And so the plot all fell together. But this was also the story of like him, the main character, his ex-wife, like during the war, she went in, she was like a spy and he told her not to go in this place and she got captured and then and he couldn't find her. And then he found out she had a miscarriage and this caused their divorce. And meanwhile, it's like, you know, it's an Aberon mystery, but I'm like, you know, you have all this like high intensity stuff and it's not in the outline. It was like, oh no, that's the part that comes out in the thing. And so this is the part that I'm kind of pointing at is like, you're right. You can't take the characters and the plot and pretend that they don't touch. They're separate silos.
I think that was like more of what I was thinking of, like when things were being worked on there. But yeah, if you're just listing out things that happen and not like why they happen or what this means to the character and stuff like that. Yeah.
So you were saying it's like what you do. What is it? What is it that you do? What is your process, Trevor?
Well, so like essentially I will have an idea in my head of who this character is and whatnot. And, what kind of plot I want to happen. And like the project that I'm working on right now, the one that I've just set deadlock, I'm like, this is the one that I'm going to write out as a full novel now. Mm-hmm. I was going through the second version of the beat sheet and I was doing this character's scenes and I was like, this doesn't work. And then the more I looked at it, I was like, oh, that's because this character's plot is essentially the same as this other character, the one of the other point of view characters, just in a different way. So I completely scrapped that. And I'm like, okay, so I just decided that moment, okay, we're just going to try this out. Instead of her being a new leader, she has been the leader. Instead of it being the former leader that was captured, it's her husband. And so I just went with that and just kind of had a idea of these are the things that this new character I have developed in my head right now is going through. And then just kind of worked through the scenes and was like, oh, and this actually ties really well into this, into here, into there, and just kind of laid the track down. But I haven't sat down and like worked out her whole backstory and everything yet, just because I'm just trying out this beat sheet this time to see how things fall.
You know, I've said to you guys that I know my characters' whole lives, and I know, you know, when they're gonna die and how they're gonna die and stuff like that. Let me clarify that. When it's like, you know, when they're gonna die and how they're gonna die, it's kind of thing like, as an old man who sacrifices himself for his friends, you know, mm-hmm. like on occasion I have it like very, very, very clearly, like, you know, the cursed blade that I will now foreshadow in book one will stab him in book six or something. You know? But I mean,
that's my book six blade.
That's my book six blade. Don't touch it. Check off. I'm getting to it. I'm getting to it.
I love it.
It's there is, in fact, still good in Darth Vader, and Luke will redeem him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not, you know, oh, they'll fight on the bridge of the Death Star. You know what I mean? Not that. The other thing is I largely don't write those things down. I just kind of think it through. Then I'm like, well, logically, you know, again, I'm all over the place with these metaphors. But you know what? I was about to give a Superman metaphor. I'm going to make it stick to Star Wars, damn it.
That
it's like, well, if Darth Vader was a Jedi and he did betray everybody and he's full of anger and rage and didn't know he had kids and there is still good in him, well, logically, you know, this mm-hmm. is what would happen to him.
Yeah.
You know, like it's all of them. Yeah.
I kind of want to the logically one. I think the word that needs to be other logically for the story.
Sure.
This is what needs to happen, because I do think that one thing that like, because that's the thing that Grognard's always goes like, that doesn't they why would they do that? It's like, because that is story.
Yeah. Because fuck you, that's why.
And some of that is like, I want this ending, and or it can be I want this character, like, you know, this about the way that all of Anakin Skywalker's story has been set up, that this is the question you have to end with. You know, does he still have good in him? What happens when all the things he thought he'd lost are not gone? Like, that's the thing to do. Less like.
That was such a wonderful way to phrase it. Now I get all emotional. I'm like, everything he thought he
loved is not gone. That's my favorite part of writing.
My boy.
Trevor,
before we get off this call, remind me to tell you an absolutely astonishing Star Wars theory that I heard earlier today that I so hope is true. And sorry, readers and listeners, I'm not gonna tell you.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a tweet out there.
No, I didn't tweet about it. I didn't. Well, right? That's how serious this is. But I will come back.
I feel very special and honored
when this is all done. When this is all done, if the theory, I mean, it's not my idea. It was told to me that they were like, this is where the Star Wars story is heading. And I was like, oh my God, I hope that's where it's headed. Okay. And I will tell you, you know, like in 2 years or 5 years in episode 700 of this, when it all comes out, I'm going to be like, bah! It was. Remember NaNoWriMo before the troubles? I mentioned that I would come back and tell you, and here it is. Yeah.
Speaking of NaNoWriMo, and because we are getting towards the later end of this episode, I want to put a call out here for folks. If you have any questions specifically about NaNoWriMo, anything that you are worried about or need some advice on, or even if you just want us to be like, hey, you got this, write into writingaboutdragonsthishit@gmail.com, and maybe we'll do a special little listener episode next week for wrapping up Preptober.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, more than anything, y'all, you know, we talk about a lot of this stuff because this is what all of us do for a living. And again, these are things that people have pontificated literally for thousands of years.
Thousands.
Like, literally, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, Aristotle had a lot to say about all of this and how all of this worked, you know? The number one thing that NaNoWriMo is about is cultivating the habit, just cultivating the habit of writing and having a manuscript done that you can be proud of. Nothing else matters. Everything else is bonus and window dressing that you can add in later in your journey. Just whatever you got to do to get your 1500 words a day.
Yep. Yep.
It is 1500 words a day. And then
1664.
1664, like when Columbus didn't sail the ocean blue.
Now I'm pretty sure he was dead by then. Good riddance.
Good.
Well, any last thoughts about structure and outlining?
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. This is one of those few times where I'm sad this isn't a video episode, because both of you looked at the camera with the like, that's everything we got.
I mean, it can go on a napkin. Like, don't overthink it.
Go on a napkin. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that is a good place to wrap things up. Friends, where can people find you and what awesome things are you working on?
Oh my God. This
is... She's so doing so many things.
So much stuff. So like I so said, proud of my Aaron. Next book got announced is available for pre-order. If you like RuneScape, The Gift of Guthix is the name of it, and that means something to you, which is great. If you don't know anything about RuneScape, that's okay. Neither did I when I started this process, but my brain is full of RuneScape now. So it joins Forgotten Realms in a... You know, well, I knew things about Forgotten Realms before I started, but not by a lot. Anyway, so that's one thing. I'm going to be at World Fantasy, not this weekend, but next weekend in Kansas City. And then the weekend after that, I will be at Grand Rapids Comic Con. I will be doing a presentation. I keep forgetting to tell them what I'm doing. So something like what we do here, except I think I'm by myself. That will be fun, I hope.
Be with you in here. You know... That actually makes me think, like, are we about to take a hiatus? Because I'm in England for 2 weeks, and then Aaron's all over creation. Like, I don't know. If you don't hear from us for a while, y'all, and...
I think we're at least going to do one next week, so we'll find out next week.
Next week's fine, and then I'm back, and I'll be the next week's okay for me. Well, we'll figure this scheduling stuff is not interesting.
We'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
Hey, that's what recordings are for. We're always with you. Like Jedi herpes.
any other places people can find you, Aaron?
Oh, that's right. Twitter and Blue Sky. I'm Aaron M. Evans. You can join me on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers on Mondays for concentration check, a co-writing space. You can come get some work done with me. And then on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Pacific, I DM Fearful Symmetry with a bunch of writers, including Trevor.
Hey. Play. Well, I don't know that guy. B. Dave Walters, I say words about things. Visit theundisputedacademy.com, where I have video masterclasses about writing, running TTRPGs, playing TTRPGs, and creating TTRPG content. But the writing is novels, screenplays, graphic novels, comic books. I'll save you 5 years in your journey into becoming a professional writer. Most of the stuff I'm doing is things you won't know yet, like stuff I can't announce and things that I'm under NDA for. And then I'm going to be in England in 2 weeks. And yeah, so, you know, my life is dope and I do dope things.
That's a nice feeling.
You can find me on all the dystopian social medias at the Trevor. There's an A hiding in there. And you can find me on Fearful Symmetry on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on twitch.tv Dungeon Scrawlers. Yeah, making sure that you hear that, because you should go watch it, because it's really good. We're doing, and it's drama. I love it. It's very fun.
A lot of drama.
Drama's
my favorite part.
Yeah.
My least favorite part is when you jerks counterspell me, but
that was like mean.
That sometimes.
Can always counterspell the counterspell. Have a shootout.
but that is gonna do it for this week's episode. Thank you.
Wait, you didn't say where we could. Oh yeah, you did just say where we could find you.
Now I'm gonna tell you where you can find the podcast, because thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you have any questions or comments or questions about NaNoWriMo or just support for NaNoWriMo, send those into writingaboutdragons@gmail.com. And if you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can follow us on Blue Sky @AboutDragons. But until next week, grow out about some dragons and shit.